Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. We've got a great show lined up for you this morning. I got my co-host, Mr. Rob Greenlee, with us on the bottom square, and our guest on the top square, which will remain a mystery for the moment, but it's really no mystery. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, Todd. I think this is a great day. I'm back in Seattle, and it's cloudy in Seattle, and it's been raining, so things are definitely back to normal, and I'm excited. This week we're going to talk about, you know, a podcast festival down in Los Angeles, and it's really focused on comedy. So I think the podcast community has tended to be a little bit fractured between, you know, the comedy side and all the other podcasters, and it's great to, and it's for no real reason, I mean, other than it's just a different community, and kind of bring that together. So I wanted to have a guest on that's kind of leading the charge at the LA Podfest. So it's an exciting show today.
Well, we've got Chris Messini on, and Chris, we were playing with your video on Skype, and it was not cooperating. Thanks to the pre-merger cable speed of a certain TWSC company. But you're on with this audio. Good morning.
It is great to be here. Audio only, gentlemen. Thank you.
And you know, it's what, you know, most of the people are listening anyway, so they don't need to see all three of our ugly mugs. But for those of you that are on the stream today, we're up live at live.geeknewscentral.com, and you can come join us in the chat room. So Rob, you mentioned being back in Seattle and it's raining, so you had your 2 weeks of summer, right? So
yeah, exactly.
And I have to laugh because it's continual summer here, so it never changes. But exciting stuff. Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself to begin with, I guess. That's probably the best for people to get a 411 on you. Tell them about yourself, and then I guess you can dive into the LA Podfest. Go ahead.
Absolutely. My name's Chris Messini, and I've been a comedian and a writer for over 20 years. And when podcasting started, it was one of those things where comedians, especially in Los Angeles, were kind of jumping on board with it. And I had the same reaction that everyone else did. What's a podcast? And we had started our website called comedyfilmnerds.com, where comedians and filmmakers could review movies, talk about movies, and sell merchandise. And we started the podcast. And when we started the podcast, we realized that the podcast wasn't supporting the site. The site was then supporting the podcast. The podcasting had, you know, started to really take off, and we really love doing it. And it's a great outlet for comedians to generate audiences and kind of be free of the restrictions of a set list on stage. And it's been really, really great for comedy in general. And then another comedian, a friend of ours, Dave Anthony, came to us and said, "Hey, what about a podcast festival?" And Graham and I immediately said, "No, that sounds like too much work." So we were like, I don't know. But Graham and I also, my partner in Comedy Film Nerds, Graham Elwood, we were also filmmakers. So we knew how film festivals worked. We'd been to comedy festivals. So that was one of the reasons that Dave Anthony had come to us, and because we kind of knew how festivals worked. And eventually he convinced us, and we thought a podcast festival would be a great idea because it will focus on one specific thing: the relationship between the audience and the podcaster that exists in no other medium. It's a community, and it's a personal connection that the podcaster has with the podcast fan that no other medium really has. And we wanted to get everyone together and experience that all at once, where the fans could meet their favorite podcasters, the podcasters could meet their fans, and also have panels and workshops and parties and really make it a community for 3 days. And as you can see from the website, that it's pretty much comedy-centric right now. But we are expanding and going into other podcast genres. Like last year, we had the Stuff You Should Know guys, and we'll be expanding a little bit more, too. And sometimes it's interesting. We get like a lot of emails like, "Why don't you have non-comedy podcasts in?" And sometimes they turn us down, too. That's the other thing. We ask like a lot of like NPR podcasts, and they couldn't work it in with their schedule, or they're too busy. So we are definitely expanding the genres. It's just going to be a little slower. And one of the reasons is because comedy is an easier sell for a live performance. when you get out of the comedy genre, there's not as many podcasts that do live shows. And that's the bulk of the festival is live shows. So we are definitely expanding. That's one of the reasons we didn't call it the Los Angeles Comedy Podcast Festival, is because long term we want to incorporate every podcast genre, from tech to politics to, you know, wrestling or whatever, fan podcasts. But we're doing it slowly because we're on a limited budget, and also, you know, there's only four of us and there's a million podcasts. So we are slowly but surely going through the list, and right now we're still invite only. But one of the other places that you could actually find some non-comedy podcasters is in the panels and workshops. Like, for instance, one of the workshops or panels is moderated by the creator of the 5x5 tech network. So we have a lot of expansion that we're actually working on. So, but it'll be a slow process. So we're happy to talk to you guys about it. That's for sure.
You know, what is interesting with this, and, you know, guys making it a festival, and you actually have the, you know, the live recordings, I think, which would work well in some genres, but I don't know if I'd want to, as a techie, definitely, I think it'd be cool to attend, but I don't know if anyone's interested in hearing a live recording of this. It's, yeah, you know, they do come in and watch about the show, but I don't know if they would come and just come to a room like they would for a comedian, because it's more social, you know, it's a social engagement type thing. And
exactly right. Yes. But you'd be great on a panel. Or
that's
a
true,
workshop,
true, true.
People
true.
Would still love to meet you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
and
could
I think
I mean, about streaming and Skype and Time Warner cable technology and how.
Yeah, I know that Aaliyah LaPorte brings in live, kind of like live audiences to his programs, and I think it's an interesting trend that to actually get more real world live engagement, you know, with podcasts, and that's what I really really like about, you know, what you're doing is that. Yeah, and I know that there's a few other podcast festivals around the country. I know that there's one back in New York that's trying to get up and going, that's kind of doing a similar thing. But I like the combination of what you're doing with the panels, trying to help podcasters kind of learn about the craft and the trade, and then having the other side of it where, you know, there's live performances and actual big name podcasters there. I think it's a fantastic concept that really, I think, could spread around the country and be very effective.
We wanted to set it up. Thank you first, and then we wanted to set it up as a, pretty much a Comic-Con for podcasting, where it's a mix of industry, but it's shows, it's fun, it's for the fans, it's also for podcasters. One of the things that we're also really proud of that we started last year is called the Podcast Lab, and this is sponsored by Squarespace. And what it is if you're a podcast and you're not programmed officially in the festival, it doesn't matter. You could go to the festival and go into the lab and record a podcast there. All you got to do is bring some of your recording equipment, and we offer power. You can plug in. Squarespace offers snacks. You could go and relax. It's a great, fun atmosphere. And the best thing about it is all the comedians and other podcasters that are in the festival wander around and go into the lab, and you can get interviews as a podcaster that you wouldn't normally have access to. So that's another way we try to make it a community for all podcasters.
This isn't your guys' first rodeo. This has been going on for a while too, right?
This is actually only the third year of the festival, but Graham and I, like I said, have been to many, many different festivals for comedy and filmmaking, and we've been to Comic-Con many times. As we've seen how festivals work, what works and what doesn't. And granted, there's always a learning curve, but we kind of knew going in the vision of what we wanted it to be. And I think that really helped. The other thing that helped, too, is we brought in a fourth partner, Andy Wood, who runs the Bridgetown Comedy Festival. So you have pretty much four partners with experience in all different areas. So when you put us all together, we can kind of get a vision of where we want it to be and where we want it to go.
And you know, what's different about this too, Rob, is they get a mix of listeners and podcasters, unlike the other events, which is pretty...
just podcasters.
Yeah. So how does that work out then? What's the mix? Do you have a ratio of listeners to podcasters, or how's it stack out?
It's definitely fan heavy. I'd say it's probably about 70-30, something like that. Yeah, it's about 70% fans, 30% podcasters and quote industry, if you could say that, like, you know, podcast producers and networks and everyone else that comes down. I mean, one of the things that also helped, too, is, like you said, the comedy community, especially in Los Angeles, is fairly closely knit. So it's a matter of, you know, we're not going through agents or managers. We have everyone's home phone number. So it's easier to program because we've had relationships with these people for the last 20 years.
And one thing that's definitely different is, I think, you know, LA is a big enough, you know, obviously a huge city. Population density helps as well in getting the local folks out. And I don't know if you could do this, and you could do this probably in New York and a few other large major cities, but I don't think this would work in, let's say, Omaha or someplace like that. So
it would be a bigger challenge. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's true.
We're finding too that some people that come down for the festival, but may have never been to Los Angeles before. So what they do is they come for the festival and stay a couple more days and see Universal or Disney or go surfing in Santa Monica or whatever. So they make it more of like a week-long vacation with the festival as like the heart of it.
Well, let's kind of talk about the structure of the whole event. I mean, you guys are using a variety of different venues for the live events. Could you go through that and how that works and well, approximately
one of the things we wanted to do is actually keep it at a central location. So, okay. Like one of the things we've seen with comedy festivals is they're spread out through a city. And we didn't want to do that with this. We wanted it really to be a self-contained event. So everything is at the Sofitel Hotel in Beverly Hills. Yes. Okay. And we'll have about four different rooms going at a time. And whether that'll have a show or a panel, whatever. So we're going to have people make – one of the things we wanted to do like a film festival is you got to make a hard decision. You're not going to be able to have to – you're not going to be able to see everything. So you have to pick what you want to see, and you're never going to get to see everything if you're there live.
Okay, I guess, when I was reading the schedule, it looked like, you know, it was in multiple locations. So because of
it's just the room names. At one location.
Yeah, exactly. I got you.
And Rob, so, you know, and looking at the schedule, you know, it's, you know, the full 1 hour slot looks like, you know, like on the Friday night when the event kicks off. Yeah. He's got a couple of hours with a, you know, standard reception. People are getting checked in, and then lots of opportunities to have fun all the way right up to midnight. Now that's probably something a little different than a normal show. Now, do you guys go that late? I'm going to look at Saturday's schedule. So you guys go pretty late, even up in, on the Saturday night show. That's way different than maybe not. You know, we have our events that go pretty late as well, but it's. But it's different. I think it's cool. So you guys going to have bars set up in each of these rooms so that everybody can, how's that work?
That's a great question. And one that's come up many times.
I'll bet.
What we're doing is all the rooms are on a centralized floor, even though they're separate from each other. So the bar will actually be in the foyer area with the sponsors. So the sponsors like that as well, because they know that's going to be extra traffic if they're near the bar. So everyone can come out of, it doesn't matter what room you're coming out of, you're going to have to go past the sponsors and bar. So that's where we're going to be pretty much set up. And one of the things too is this is the first year at the Sofitel Hotel, and they understand entertainment events. We were at one hotel last year and they like shut the bar off like, you know, hours before the events are going. Well, we didn't know we were supposed to go later. I'm like, you have an event filled with comedians and audience members. Why would you not want to make money? It made no sense. So we're very happy that the Sofitel understands programming and shows and the fact that people want to eat and drink. So the thing that we're really excited about, too, is because of the sponsorship, and we're able to keep the prices of the event low, and you're going to get a lot for your money. You're going to get all these receptions are actually included, so you're going to get like free food and a couple free drinks each night. It's going to be really, really great that comes with your ticket.
And I was just going to bounce over there and look at what the ticket pricing was. So I can't beat this. It's like $99 for the whole deal.
Yep. Uh huh.
Yeah, wow. That's great. That's a great price.
And it's smart. You guys did one day passes as well. Someone can only just come for a day. Yes. You know, someone's maybe working Friday, so you know they buy the Saturday ticket and.
Right.
Yeah.
The
smart.
Other thing it does too is if people, there's a couple people that only want to see one specific podcast and leave, like a super fan.
Right.
That literally is just, I just want to see this one, and then they just buy that day ticket. But here's what happens: what they do is they go, they see that one podcast, and they realize that it's kind of a lot of fun in a community, and they end up staying anyway.
Right.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure.
And you added, I'm just going through the website as well, merchandise stuff. You've got, it's cool too that you know, so many of these conferences, they use these complicated booking systems, and you guys are smart. You're using Eventbrite. You know, that takes a whopping 30 minutes to set up and you're done. You know, that's just... And you guys are probably lean and mean, like you said, just four of you working it. So you guys is hair on fire right now, getting ready for the show, or have you guys kind of got like a kit that you take to the, now that's your third year, do you have like boxes of stuff you just pack up and roll in from the previous year?
Sure. You would think it'd get easier every year with the knowledge we have, but there's always something else that comes up. And as the festival gets larger and expands and new sponsors come on board, it ends up being the same amount of work every year, which is surprising. You know, all four of us thought, oh, it'll get easier every year, and it hasn't. But in a good way, because that means it's actually growing and there's new challenges and more things going on. One of the biggest challenges we're having this year, although it's almost done, which is great, is we're getting a lot of emails and people saying, like, look, I can't make it. I live either in another country or it's too expensive for me to fly from Kansas and stay there. How can I experience the festival? So what we're going to do is we're going to offer a streaming ticket for like $25 this year, where you can actually sit at your computer and watch the entire festival, and it'll be archived. So you could watch it up to a month after the event is over, including all the workshops and panels, and then it'll go away. But that's something that's been a bear to set up, but we're almost done. So that's something that I think will really open up the festival as well.
Yeah, the bandwidth within venues is never easy. So and I imagine in LA, it's probably a little easier than other places, but has that been a big challenge with the venue, making sure they have enough bandwidth to handle four streams?
Well, here's the interesting thing. We knew that challenge going in, so we completely ignored it, and we're bringing in our own.
Oh.
We're awesome. Bringing our own lines just to make sure that we don't have a problem with the venue's bandwidth. But also that stuff all costs money, too. So we're lucky enough to have Audible sponsor the live streaming to cover a fair amount of those costs. Because, right. As you guys know, this has never been done before. So we certainly don't want to take a bath on it if it goes south.
Right.
So we're trying to keep it lean and great and, you know, kind of setting it up the way that the fans would like it to be set up. So one of the reasons, too, that we did multiple rooms and live streams is people want to see the whole festival. But also, if you watch one thing, you miss something else. So here's a way you can actually catch the stuff that you missed,
right.
Up to a month afterwards. But it's still a festival. We didn't want to make it available forever. So there really is a time limit on it. It's 1 month after, and that's it. Then it'll go away.
Oh, that's a curious – that's interesting how you're doing that. You know, I think, you know, it's great that you're having an event, but I think I want to delve into the, you know, the social interaction you have with the fans, because, you know, if you're a podcaster that's been in the space long enough, you have, and of course you guys have a little bit of a different, experience with the fans, because you oftentimes will see them at other events or at a venue, or, you know, if you're at a comedy club or wherever you may be,
yes.
You'll see them there with, you know, me. And maybe even Rob, we're behind the mic or behind the camera, and we'll talk, and then we'll go to some place. And you know, I've gotten accosted in airports, and you know, just anywhere they'll come. Hey, I'm gonna listen to your show, and they'll grab you, and you're kind of like, okay, I got to figure out who this dude is or this lady is. So, how's that?
It's a little weird if they grab you.
Well, yeah. But let's talk about that dynamic. You know, you guys are kind of used to it already, but is it really time where the fan can get up close and personal and just hang out and chat? And how's that work? You know, is it am I kind of dead on that, or?
Yeah, what it is especially for the fan who's listens to you. I mean, as you know, you're in their ears every week, so it becomes a very personal connection. But we've never met them, although We interact with them through social media, like you're saying, through Facebook and Twitter and email. So then you do get to know some of the fans as well. But when you meet them in person, it's a whole different thing. Then you can kind of hang out. And one of the things we wanted to do, too, with the parties is, you know, you can have drinks with us. But this actually brings me to another project that Graham and I were working on, and is earbuds. We're shooting a podcast documentary right now, and we'll be shooting the last footage that we need actually at the festival this year. And one of the things we discovered, we went all over the country interviewing podcasters and fans, and we actually also went to Australia and Japan. And the connection that you make with the fans is, like I said, not like no other medium. We went to Japan and we had three fans meet us there and be our guides. And I felt like we had known them for years. And they even said to us, well, we have known you for years. We've been listening to you. We know you. But it was interesting that it was an instant connection on our end as well. And well, the weirdest thing that happened to us is we were shooting in Kamakura, where, you know, where the big Buddha statue is in Japan. We've seen it in a million movies. And Graham and I are shooting there, and we got recognized. Like, hey, Graham and Chris from Comedy Film Nerds. And I realized we don't get recognized in L.A. You know, I went to Japan and got recognized. Right. The power of podcasting.
Yeah.
You know, and it's cool, too, for me when I'm out and about and someone recognizes me and they say, hey, I listen to the show. And oftentimes I can get feedback, you know, from that person about the show, what they like, what they hate. You know, it's they're willing to talk to you when they may not necessarily email you, and you get good input, and it's you know, it's all pretty constructive, and I've always liked that aspect. And but it's
most
true,
of there, it is constructive.
But you know, it is true. There is almost it's almost an instant gel, because I don't think I've met. Wow, I think about this a little bit. And this is kind of, you know, I think you've struck a point here. I don't think I've ever met someone that listens to the show that I don't like, that I was like, oh man, I don't want to hang out with that dude again.
Your audience is a reflection of your show.
Yeah, absolutely.
True.
You know, I don't think I've ever met anyone I didn't like, you know, because usually when, even if you're, you know, you're part of a group, there's always that one annoying person that you're like, oh man. But yeah, it's kind of cool. It really, really is. So
well, the other thing is, you guys are video too, so people recognize you more easily.
Right.
Sometimes if Graham and I are on the road and it's a new fan who's never seen us perform or seen us before, we get that double take if we're in the hallway and they hear our voice. I'm like, oh, you're Graham and Chris. Like, right. They didn't know what we looked like.
Right. Yeah.
Before. That's interesting too.
Yeah, you get recognized by the voice a lot. That's a tipper. So what is your attendance make of? Is it the large majority of people coming out of LA, or is it all over the country, or what are you guys seeing for attendees?
We are seeing all over the country and also outside of the country. Wow. We've seen people come in as far as Australia. And as far as like around the country, I'd say the LA people are probably only about 20%.
Wow.
Of the
attendees.
Wow, yeah, that's interesting.
It actually surprised us. We thought we'd get a lot more local people. But the other thing about Los Angeles is, if you're in the comedy community, Los Angeles is saturated with comedy shows. There's a lot of comedians you can see on a regular basis. So as far as the podcast festival goes, a lot of times it's people that don't get to see all these comedians on a regular basis, and they come in for the festival. So it's less LA centric and more people traveling in. And that's one of the reasons we wanted to have everything kind of in a one location, like a hotel. People can go there, check in the events right where they're staying. If, you know, if you want to take a break, you know, kind of like when you go to Disneyland or Disney World and you stay over, you're like, I can't be at the theme park all day. You know, you go, you watch a couple things, you go on a couple rides, you go back to the hotel, relax, then you come back and see a few more.
You know, I always assumed, and Rob, that number surprised me. I always assumed it was really LA-centric. And it was one of the reasons why I don't think it raised real high on my radar before. So I'm surprised by that number. I really am.
Yeah, we weren't sure. And then indications of that we realized that was going to be the case is, with the first year, we couldn't afford to put the festival on, so we kickstarted the festival. We wanted to see if there was enough fan demand and if people would travel and fly in for it. And it raised about $25,000within, like, I think 30 days. And that's when we knew, okay, this money is also coming from all over the place. That means people are going to be willing to travel to get here. So that's how we kind of knew. And interestingly, Kickstarter was a great indicator of who would actually come to the festival.
So do you guys do any strong, you know, kind of get the word out in LA about the about the event itself? Do you guys, put up flyers or something like that at the comedies, comedy clubs around LA, or is there, a big push?
Interestingly, the best advertising for a podcast festival is through the podcast. So every comedian who's programmed, we make sure that they're the ones actually promoting. But this year we hired a publicist as well. So we're seeing a large jump too in the awareness of the festival. It's, it's the same old thing as, like, you get what you pay for. We had a very small marketing budget the last couple of years. Now this year we had a marketing budget. We hired a publicist, and now we're getting more interviews, more press hits. And I think even Comedy Central's At Midnight had a couple podcasting comedians on, and they mentioned the festival on Comedy Central. So there's definitely a difference now with us spending some money on publicity.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm not sure that we've told the folks listening to this when the actual event is. I think September 26th through the 28th. I just wanted to throw that out.
September 26th to the 28th, yes. It's at the Sofitel Hotel in Beverly Hills. And everything and all the info and tickets you can get at lapodfest.com. The streaming tickets are not available yet. They will be within a week.
Wow, that's awesome.
Now, one thing that I've was looking over and I think is way different than any other event. And Rob, I think you were all already well aware of this, but I want to talk the schedule itself. If you look at it, even on the Saturday and Sunday schedule, they have three full slots of comedians doing their show or doing something in a room. And then there's just a single track of basic podcast stuff, sponsor relations, workshops for like Libsyn, talking about I Love Green Guide Letters, and I'm not fully sure what that is, but
that's an Australian podcast.
Okay. About getting a job, getting started. So, there's just a few workshops, which, gives people a taste of the actual community, but it is pretty cool that, because it is a festival, and obviously I understand why you guys have done this, is that it's heavily, heavily focused on the content and the community and the relations. And
yes.
And looks like to me like everyone's going to have a great time. I think it's going to be fun because, panels, panels can get a little old,
Yep. And one of the things we did too with the panels is we made sure there's always a comedian or a podcaster on each panel to keep things lively and fun, even when you're getting actual information. So none of the panels will be dry. That I can guarantee.
Well, that's good. Because, oftentimes we're a little bit too serious with ourselves, and this is what the space is about. It's about having fun. Chris, I'm sure, what drew you in the beginning to podcasting? What was the appeal for you? What made you say, oh my God, we got to do this?
That's what was really interesting. It was more my partner that got me into it, Graham Elwood. He's like, we really need to start a podcast to support the site and Comedy Film Nerds and what we're doing. And I'll be honest that when he first mentioned it, I didn't see the point. I was like, well, I don't know if that's really, how to help everything. And then it was one of those moments that when we started doing it, that's when I went, oh, now I get it. I get it. It's the most amazing thing about podcasting, especially for a performer, is that there are no filters. There is no network telling you what to do. It's literally you and the audience. There's no gatekeepers. There's no middleman. And you're going directly to your audience. You want to change your show, you change it. You want to change the content, you can literally do whatever you want. And that's the thing that was most attractive to podcasting. That's why I love doing it. Like, I can see myself doing podcasts, for many, many, many years to come because I just enjoy the freedom of the medium.
Well, is there, when you guys are going to and again, here in Honolulu, we don't have many comedy options. So when you guys are doing...
You were just there in January.
Oh, that's I miss you guys. So when you guys are doing stand up at a venue, do they put? I can't imagine they tell you guidelines. Do they? Do they give you guidelines at those venues, or is it you? Normally, are you restricted strictly when you're in radio and television? But you're not restricted when you go to these venues, are you?
Yes, really? That's the that is a little secret of comedy clubs. Absolutely, the way the club is run. There might be certain things that you can't mention. There might be certain things, like some people is like, this is a cleaner crowd. You can't curse as much. There's definitely the restrictions on everything you do. And the other thing is that a lot of times it's difficult to get booked in all the venues, too. You know, a lot of times comedians, they're spending 60 to 70% of their time just getting the bookings. And with podcasts, it's like you've eliminated all that nonsense. You can do whatever you want, whenever you want. Like, I don't have to get booked onto the internet. You know, I can literally go right to the audience. And it's interesting when you see, like, oh, well, the bigger comedians, they must not have to deal with any of this nonsense anymore. And it's not true. They have to as well. There's, you know, there's venues, there's restrictions, and, you know, you have to fill a certain amount of seats in the house that, or they won't have you back. And there's all these things for live performance that bands go through as well. It's not just comedians, but any live performance has these rules and restrictions and expected returns on the venue's basically investment in paying you to be there. So, yeah, there's all sorts of stuff you have to deal with as well.
Yeah, I would have never imagined. Well, maybe, you know, maybe I should have just thought it was part of the normal stuff that a comedy club would say, hey, you can't say X or B, or, you know, or you have to refrain from this line of topic. That to me is a little bit surprising. I can kind of understand it on television, but I guess as I think about it now, it makes sense. So I can see where unconstrained, no one telling you what you can or can't do has got to be absolutely liberating for, you know, as the space allows.
Yeah. Wow, right. That's true.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. And we're not limited on, like, oh, you have to have a big name guest on your show. I'm like, sometimes we do have big name guests on our show. And then one day we had Graham's dad, you know, so it doesn't matter. We could literally do whatever we want.
Yeah.
Todd, I was just thinking as, you know, here the last couple of weeks we've had guests on from the Podcast Movement and the New Media Expo and now LA Podfest, kind of. You know, each of those shows kind of has their own little kind of special kind of spin to them,
yep.
Right? Or a special direction. I really wonder if this LA Podfest concept needs to be applied to the New Media Expo or to Podcast Movement as a kind of like a piece that reaches more of the fan base as well, and that there might be kind of a something that the whole podcast community learns from what's going on, you know, at the LA Podfest and
well, we actually just started talking to New Media Expo. So we're in contact with them now.
Oh, you are? Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah. We just got connected with them, and that's one of the things we're starting to expand on. We're talking to iTunes and Apple right now. And, you know, now that we're in our third year, we're starting to get on more radar, basically, you could say. So we're starting kind of that process. I mean, one of the things we'd like to do with the LA Podcast Festival is take this more on the road and expand it to other places and other venues, that places that, you know, aren't necessarily maybe, you know, have another one in New York or Florida or whatever, that we can get other fans that may not be able to make it to Los Angeles. So the large challenge with that is that a lot of these comedians are based in LA. Once you get out of LA, you have a large travel budget for the festival to put all of the podcasters and performers up. So that's something that we're looking into.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that there's probably a need for it up in the Seattle market. I know that. So, yes. I mean, I think it's a big enough market. But, yeah, I mean, as you look at other cities around the country that are larger, you know, like Chicago or, you know, like Atlanta or those kind of cities – there might be more of a market
support. Absolutely. Could definitely support a festival like this.
Yep.
And I think, Rob, it goes back to their schedule. You know, the schedule is unlike any other. It's, you know, it's again, it's 75%, you know, the content. and 25% the business crap, you know? So, you know, that's a, you know, and most people that go to conferences, it's 90% business crap and it's 10% fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, but there is a place for a strong business focus, but I agree. I think if we want to create events that are much larger and help grow the podcasting space and community, I think it makes sense to have more fans involved.
I agree. I want the fans to come and hang out and I guess from I'm just thinking about the categories of shows. You know, just off the top of my head, I can think of a number of shows that are non-comedy centric that have huge fan bases. That you know, a lot of video podcasters that have some pretty cool shows that would make, you know, I guess for a better word, good eye candy for a 1 hour session. You know, so.
Well, yeah, I think up for some referrals, so we're happy to you know, get some referrals in our way.
Yeah, I think that there's quite a few genres that could be successful at this. I think it's all about how kind of engaging the hosts are, and
that's true.
How big their communities are that they've been able to build. I mean, there's a lot of different genres that could play in the space, and there has been. I mean, if you look at the NPR folks, they've done a lot of live events. I know that the Slate podcasts do live events, you know. So, and those aren't necessarily comedy podcasts.
Right.
Yeah, but if they do live events, then, you know, it counts.
It does. Or it helps, I guess, to be fun.
Definitely. Yeah. It's like some podcasters, even a few comedians, say, like, I don't like doing my show live. You know, it ends up that the individual performer or podcaster makes that decision where they want to do a live component of their show or not. Like the Welcome to Night Vale guys, we had them last year, but now their live show has evolved into something completely different, that they only play theaters now with their live show. So it's, you know, every podcast and every performer is different.
Sure. You betcha.
Very cool. What do you think your numbers are going to be this year?
Well, the interesting thing is, it's with a festival like this, we probably will get a couple thousand people through the door for the span of the entire weekend. But if you add up all of the people that will actually hear a podcast from the festival, from every podcaster, it's probably going to be in the millions of downloads, which is something that the sponsors and you know, advertisers really like. And then the streaming is new this year, and in all honesty, we're not sure what the numbers will be, but we've gotten a huge demand for it, so we're hoping it it takes off and gives the fans who can't make it to the festival an option to actually experience it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you, you know, those are some numbers. A couple thousand.
That's not bad. Yeah,
it's really good.
Yeah. No, we're really happy. Every year it gets bigger. So we're hoping that the best thing that can happen is that we're too big for this hotel. Now we got to get to a bigger hotel with more ballroom space. And,
right.
You know, expanding until you're in the biggest one in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's
it. Well, Todd, I mean that's as big as the New Media Expo has been the last few years, and like four times bigger than Podcast Movement.
Right, and. So I guess and you know what's true about this event too is it's probably a lot more fans than podcasters. Yeah. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I said, it's about 70-30, 70% fans.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Todd, if you think about it, I mean, that number is just a fraction of how many people actually listen to these shows.
Right.
I mean, it's also a fraction of the, as you know, with podcasting, there's still a fraction of the public is even listening to podcasts. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
What's the number? Is it like 80% of people still have no idea what a podcast is? I mean, we're still at the very beginning of the medium.
I think.
I 100% agree with that. I think we are in the very early stages of this growth. I think we will know when this medium has reached really, really a critical mass when we're talking about local podcasting. You know, I mean, where people actually podcast and most of their audience comes from like LA or something like that, you know. But I think that's years away before we get there.
And I think too, we'll know when
the 50s.
Yeah.
Well, knowing we've hit saturation too, when we start talking about bandwidth bills being a challenge, you know, because with success comes, you know, the ability to have to be able to move this, move all this bandwidth, and then it's, and then you're going to be into like, oh my God, we have to make money now, because if we can't, we can't afford the bandwidth bill.
With success comes throttling.
Yeah. Well, Todd, hopefully by then, the cost of bandwidth will have continued to drop, right?
Well, if it's,
it won't be as expensive.
Well, if it's any indication of what has happened over the past, you know, just maybe 3 years or 4 years, you know, the bandwidth has, you know, Google has been a very equalizing company in the market, not only with AWS, but with, you know, their CloudFront services. They have forced the big boys in the space to reprice, and too much to their detriment, I'm sure, but they're definitely using the economy of scale model over there at Amazon. It's really affecting the other CDNs.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll all just go to one company that owns all the bandwidth, and then they can price gouge, so that'll be perfect.
Yeah.
Who knows? That could be Google at some point.
Well, they didn't buy all that dark fiber and not light it up for, you know, for a reason.
They're making a Christmas tree.
But we could all just be on Clear, and then Clear will contact us each week and say, you need to send us a check for the bandwidth you moved through here, you know, and
yeah, there you go.
The toll trolls. Well, very good. Rob, good rundown of what's going on at the LA Podfest.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm really excited about it. I'm planning on going to the festival, so it's going to be a really, really, really different experience from what I've had. I think going to, you know, New Media Expo or Podcast Expo, and
so come on down and meet Rob.
Yeah. There you go. So it'll be exciting to actually meet you, Chris. I haven't actually met you in person yet either. So
yeah, that's one of the great things about the festival too, is I get to meet like a lot of people. Like I'm going to get to meet you. I'm going to get to meet some of the guys from Apple and some of the podcasters that were programmed this year I've never met yet. And you're always meeting and talking to new people, which just grows the community. So that's one of the things I always look forward to every year too, is meeting the new people.
And I think
new to me anyway.
Sure. And I think from my perspective, I was what's really kind of set me back in a chair and definitely will be on my list to go next year is the it's just not an LA centric event. I was really not aware of that at all. I didn't know that there was it was that big of a audience that comes in outside of Los Angeles.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the great thing I love about it is that there's no demographic to it either. We've got housewives from the Midwest that come in, and they've got like college kids from New Jersey. And, you know, when a podcaster from Australia, you know, comes in, it's really like, who's the podcast demographic? And the answer is everyone.
Right.
It really is. It's depending on, you know, what you like and what you listen to. It's someone from every walk of life. And that's what's great about it, just with a common interest.
Hey, Chris, on your guys' from a comedy standpoint, you know, and I haven't took a deep into this, and I probably should at some point, but what are you guys seeing that your actual age demographic is kind of on an average for comedy? And the main question I'm asking is, do you see the 18 to 25 crowd?
You know what? That's the expected age you would see for comedy, but it's not like that anymore, especially with podcasting. We see a lot of men and women in their 40s and 50s that don't necessarily go to live shows. They have families. It's harder for them to get out. But, you know, they'll love listening to Marc Maron as they go to work or whatever. So the visible demographic is younger because the younger people come out more. But as far as the listening audience goes, it goes all over the map.
Yeah, kind of and I'm not surprised by that because it kind of falls in line with stuff I've seen too. So yeah, good kind of comparison. But and it makes sense too that the younger folks would, you know, they're not married, don't have kids, they don't have to worry. Maybe their job is a little more flexible. They're
getting more sleep.
Yeah.
I when I was young, I didn't get much sleep. I was out running the crowds. You know, I was out having fun. So I don't remember as a young person getting much more sleep than I do now. But
more sleep than when you have children.
Actually, you don't sleep when you get children. They're the worst alarm clocks in the world.
No, I haven't slept for 6 years.
Todd, I think that your question is a good one, and I think the answer to that, and I see a little bit of a glimpse at that to answer that question with Podcast One, but I think the age demographic is gonna shift when there's content that appeals to that age demographic, and I think up to this point, I think we're coming into a time when there's more content that does appeal to the 18 to 25 year olds. I think it's early stage for that. I mean, we're seeing at Podcast One, we launched the Snooki podcast, and that has started to really move our numbers more towards the younger direction, the 18 to 25 year olds. So I think it's going to be driven by content. You know, those 18 to 25 year olds need to get behind the mic and start doing shows.
You know,
Or more of them anyway. There's certainly a fair amount of podcasts that come online all the time. But yeah, that's exactly right. You know, anything from when you're talking to your own demographic, there's something that no one else can match with that. If you're a 22-year-old talking to 22-year-olds, I mean, you see it on YouTube. That's a perfect example of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of YouTube videos that get millions of hits that you and I will look at and go, I don't get this at all. This makes no sense to me. And, you know, you ask your kids, I'm like, oh, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah, I have a daughter that's 23, and, you know, I watch my kids, my younger kids. I have an 18-year-old, 16-year-old, and a 10-year-old, and the three oldest ones, you know, I understand where this space is going. They are 100% connected. They're on their mobile device. They don't necessarily hang out and watch TV as much as they used to. So they are the audience that that's who we want, because that's how we're reaching them right there in that mobile phone. Right. So, you know, they're, if nothing else, through time, we're going to grow the audience just because they're going to grow. The content might not be there now, but you know, my 23-year-old's taking a different perspective on life as she gets a little older, and you know, as we all do, our consumption tastes change. So
but they're tethered to their delivery system already.
Right. Yeah, that's why.
And as I think as those young people get older, I think they start to appreciate audio more. So that's the other trend that actually happens. Is that the good thing is that those young people get older, and then older people tend to listen to more podcasts.
I think it's indicative, though, that I think the radio and television space is, you know, totally screwed. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of time to wait as the folks that are actually doing the actual cord cutting cut. But at the same point, some of those parents will come back on to cable when they have kids, because what do the kids want to watch? They want to watch the, you know, the kids shows, the cartoons, the Barneys, and all the, you know, all the stupid stuff that kids watch. And
live television viewing is pretty much dead, as you guys know. It's right. Everything's on demand. I mean, I don't think if I asked my kids, when is this show on, they would have no idea what I'm talking about. They just know I want to watch this show. Oh, here's the library. You know, I can watch this whenever I want.
That's true, too.
Yeah. And clearly that's what's driving this whole podcast growth that we're seeing right now, is that the culture has basically abandoned live anything. It's just like this show. We don't get a lot of people watching us live. All of the consumption is all done on demand. Yeah.
This is the one thing that's left that, you know, people will always watch live.
Yeah.
The worst thing they ever invented. And I don't even think they realized they were going to do it to themselves, was the DVR. And as soon as, you know, and also a fast forward button on remote controls. Don't you think that the executives would have wished they could have removed the fast forward button from remote controls? Because what happens to us, if we're watching a DVR, as soon as a commercial comes down, I don't know about you, but I'm up there and I got my thumb on that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now the advertisers are, they're designing, some of them are designing their commercials to be able to be viewed while you're fast forwarding. So if you notice when you're fast forwarding, you'll still be able to make out a logo or something like that.
It's it's probably.
Yeah, I think what they're going to do is they're probably going to have to slow down the fast forwarding. I think is what they're going to have to do. I know I get a lot because our Podcast One app that doesn't have 30-second skip. So I'm constantly getting people asking us to add 30-second skip to our app, and I'm like going, that kind of breaks our advertising model.
Well, one of the things that advertisers do like and will, about podcasting is that, like, for instance, for Comedy Film Nerds, we only do live ad reads.
Right.
So we make it part of the show. There's no, like, jingle or drop-in to actually skip over. And the fans like it a little bit more because it's an advertiser that they care about, and also we make the ad part of the show, and the sponsors like it because they know for that very reason it's not going to be skipped over.
Yeah.
You know, recently I was talking with a company, and they were interested strictly in advertising and video podcast. And as the more I talked, I kind of determined what they wanted to do. And for example, let's say that company was a tape measure company. You know, they wanted the, and I've got the tape measure turned around on purpose because I'm not going to give this, whatever this junk company is, some advertisement. but you know, the product placement in podcast is coming. You know, it is coming. You just wait. You know, they're already looking at it from a, okay. So that, I think that's where the future is headed for video, and television already has it. You know, we just don't know it. If you watch, you know, you'll watch like the, you like watch Letterman or you know, any of the late night guys at the end, there's you know, products included by, and it lists, you know, the suit company, the, you know, the coffee cup company, the microphone company, all that stuff is listed. Yep. They don't necessarily say anything, but it's sitting there on the desk where they can see it, you know, so.
Well, you're a microphone company, you should be taking that advice to heart right now.
Right.
Because every podcast needs a microphone, a mixing board, and a laptop, so.
What? Yeah, Chris, I mean, I do this show with a Shure mic right here, so there's a bit of a product placement going on.
Yeah, a blue mic.
Right.
Yeah.
And oftentimes I'll get emails from people saying, "What mic is that?" And I tell them what it is, and they go look at the price, and they go, "Ugh." But if I could say, "Hey, I've got a 25% discount code that you can use," I probably could have sold 100 of these already. You know,
easily.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
Sponsors, take note.
They should. They should.
It's a little hard to do that in an audio show, though.
It's true.
I mean, I guess you can talk about, you know, things that are around you and kind of, but that's almost like a live read almost.
Well, I've got my cup of.
If they like the quality of the sound of the podcast, they know it's partially due to the microphone and the mixing board.
That's right.
You know, I may not be a fan of Starbucks, but if Starbucks came in and said, "I'm going to sponsor your show," I might start drinking a little more Starbucks, you know? So, you know, you can tell, "Oh man, oh, I got to have my Starbucks." It's, you know, that's how it can work, you know? And
you might find that you love Starbucks coffee. You don't know yet.
Yeah, I actually do like Starbucks.
I brew my own.
Yeah, we do that too. That's one thing that's good about being in Hawaii. I can actually get 100%, truly 100% Kona beans. So when I want Kona coffee, and it's definitely pretty pricey, but...
Isn't everything in Hawaii pricey?
Oh, man, it's insane. You were out here in January. You saw how much it cost.
Yeah, we were on Hawaii. I think it was Hawaii News Now. We were on...
Oh, yeah, with Bert and Ryan.
I think so. Yeah. It was great. It's we ended up, I can't remember the venue that we played though. We did it we did a live podcast, and then Graham did a stand up show. Now it was somewhere downtown in Honolulu. I don't know, but hopefully we'll be back there again.
Yeah.
There's a local comedian, James Mane, runs a lot of local shows out in Honolulu, and he brought us out for that, and it was really, really fun. What I love too is, you know, you guys have a comedy community there. It's small, but it's growing, and they're instrumental in bringing, they call them mainland acts,
right,
over to see you guys too. So there's always these little communities, which when you discover them, they're great. I'm sure you guys have stuff for like everything from a little bunch of foodies to, you know, vacation spots you like. There's always those little pockets of secret information.
Well, that actually goes into a project I'm working on that I can't talk about. at this time, but yeah. You know, and it's true. There's, you know, certain locations have certain, you know, if you think about certain venues, you know, if you're thinking about LA, it's the whole, you know, everything that the tourists do and places you can go that it's normally not on the tourist map. And same thing maybe with San Francisco. And, you know, these community pockets of content that is works good nationally for people that are going to be coming to visit. But yeah, I don't, you know, Rob, you know, you mentioned earlier that podcasts will meet mainstream when they are reaching a local audience. I don't know how that scale is big enough to support itself over a long term.
Well, if you think about what's been achieved with broadcast radio, it's been exactly that,
right?
Well, and of course, so. Broadcast has had these semi-quasi, you know, when the folks at, I can't even think of the tracking firm, sent me a notebook, a paper notebook to write down, you know, what I was listening to on the radio. And I was like, podcast by. And really, there was no, for me, it was no radio stuff. You know, and I'm sure they got that back and they're like, what do you mean that wasn't KHNL or that wasn't WKOZ or, you know, and they shredded that thing, you know, so they've had.
You didn't count, right?
No,
I
didn't count. So, and I think as the median moves online, it maybe it'll shift, but their monetization strategy is going to change because they're actually going to be measured, truly measured, not just some. You know, what someone puts on a survey booklet.
Well, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how the broadcasting folks react to new media at NAB, you know, with the New Media Expo. I think that's going to be an inflection point for just that issue right there, Todd, of how
there's still a disconnect, like you're saying. Yeah.
Chris, have you ever been to NAB by itself?
I have not. No. All right. Oh, wait, no, hold on. That's the broadcasting one, right?
Yeah.
That's
I haven't been to that. Yeah, that one I went to a couple of years ago. Yeah, but it's the same thing. It's a lot of information, but it's just not a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I guess the question for you then is how do you feel, you know, I know you said you've talked to Rick a little bit, and we don't want to pry into what you guys are talking about, but what are your thoughts so far going forward and how that mashup's going to happen over there?
We're not sure yet. We're actually still kind of talking about it. Like, we'll have those guys over at PodFest. They're going to have a table set up, and we're going to probably have a table at their event just to kind of cross-promote. As far as, like, swapping programming and things like that, we're not quite sure yet. But we're definitely going to, like we said about the podcasting community, a rising tide raises all boats.
Right.
So we're going to help each other with promotion and, you know, getting the word out about each event. And I think that's important. That's the one thing I love about podcasting is there's not this cutthroat competition. It's like, oh, well, if people listen to your show, they can't listen to mine. I'm like,
right.
No, not at all. You know, it helps all of us. Everything helps all of us. So, you know, we're happy to help and we're happy to get help. So I think it's a nice community in that regard.
And I think that's something that I think the comedy podcasters probably do it best from a networking standpoint. You guys are always cross promoting each other's shows and talking about
especially
maybe
in Los Angeles. Yeah.
But I think the podcasting community as a whole needs to do more of that. That was one of the big things in the early days when we launched Tech Podcast that I really feel was a part of our success is everyone was like, yeah, Todd's doing this. And I'm like, yeah, Andy's doing that. And, you know, there was all this, you know, And some people would maybe shift from my show to Andy's show or from one of the other team member shows, but at the same time, their spear—it was all glummed up together because the spears of influence were different across those audiences.
Yeah, and then when you cross pollinate with the different podcasts, you know, their audience comes to you and your audience goes to them. Like there's a podcast in New York, one of the earliest comedy podcasts called Keith and the Girl.
Oh yeah,
and we had heard of them, but we had never met them, and they just reached out to us, you know, like a cold email, like, hey, you know, why don't we do our, you know, why don't we be a guest on your podcast? And we're like, we're coming out to LA. I'm like, sure. So we had them on. We became friends, and whenever we're in New York, we do theirs. Whenever they're in LA, they do ours, and they'll be at the festival. They were programmed last year, but this year they'll be running panels. So it's great. You know, we're finding podcasters are generally very affable and, you know, great to talk to each other and, you know, happy to cross-pollinate. So it's been great. And this literally was a cold email. We'd never met them before.
You know, and Keith and the girl, they've been around from the beginning. Yeah. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I loaded their website. I get their newsletter. I'm on their newsletter still for how many years? And
10 years now, almost,
yeah,
probably.
So yeah. It's like I know what they're doing. You know, I know what venues they're, you know, they're hanging out. So it's just kind of funny because
I just can learn a lot from them. They really can.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, we've had, believe it or not, we've been an hour here. So
just remember that venue. We were at Hawaiian Brian's.
Oh, at Hawaiian Brian's. Yep, I know where that's at. I don't think I've been in there before, but was that a pretty good venue?
It was. It was fun. And the other thing that I loved about it is getting back to podcasting is when we did the live podcast with the local Honolulu comedians, a lot of the other local comedians and podcasters came out to support the show as well. So, you know, it was another great supportive community. So it was, again, half fans, half other comedians and podcasters. So it was a really fun time.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm glad you had a good time. I hope you left a lot of money here when you came.
Yeah, we did. I brought my family to Alani, so we left plenty of money.
Oh, you know, yeah. You know, something funny about Alani, I just have to add here. When they first opened, my house is literally, I can be in Alani's lobby in 10 minutes. I'm really, really close.
So you're on the other side of the island.
Yeah, I live out on the west side. And actually in Hawaii, the west side's a pretty good place to live, except for the traffic. But they sent us a little flyer. They said, oh, they got this thing here called Kamaina. Kamaina is your local kind. And they said, we have a Kamaina rate for the grand opening of Alani. Why don't you call us and we'll get you a room? So I'm like, you know, Kamaina rate in Hawaii is like usually a pretty good deal. It might be 25-30% off, maybe even as much as 40% off a room. And you have to show your Hawaii driver's license to get the rate. Sure. And, you know, the whole nine yards. So we called them and they said, I'm family five. We want to get a room for a couple nights. And they're like, oh, you're family five. You have to have two rooms. And I'm like, two? So, oh, no, yeah. You can't sleep five in a room. I'm like, okay. And she says, I got a great deal for you. It's only going to be $450 per room per night for a minimum of three-night stay. And I'm like...
That sounds great.
And I'm like, oh, that's a great deal. I am going to drive 10 minutes from my house to spend $2,700 to spend 3 days on your property. So that's my opinion of Alani.
By the way, if you called now, it's especially if you go in January, it's considerably less.
I'm sure it is.
I will say though, it was amazing, and we still spend a ton of money.
But yeah, they have a great facility. But yeah. Okay. Anyway,
for those that aren't watching on video, Todd flipped them off.
Yeah, I gave him the bird.
The Disney helicopters are circling.
You know, and it's just, you know, that was not, and of course I talked about it on my show, you know, so I'm immediate, like, can you believe? And of course, you know, that's, you know, if they had just made it a reason, okay, I can't sleep five everywhere else in the country. I went to the Disney property in LA and we had five in a room. They had no problem. Absolutely. We'll bring up a hide a bed for you to use. And, you know, it was no issue. But here, oh, no, you can't have five people in a room. All right. Well, Chris, thanks for being on with us.
Oh, it was great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And for everyone.
I got to say, we covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, I'd say we did. Well, let's go ahead and review kind of the event. If somebody that's listening to this wants to go, what's the best path for them?
The best place to go is just lapodfest.com, and that'll give you all the information. You could buy tickets, book the hotel room. I forgot to mention, you get discounted room rates if you book through the link on our website. That'll take you to the Sofitel Hotel, and there's some discounted room rates that only festival goers get. so you could get them cheaper. You get the tickets there. You can see the programming and the schedules, and everything's right there. And you can get tickets right now, but the streaming tickets will be available in another week or so.
Very cool. LAPodFest.com, folks, September 26th, 28th in Beverly Hills. So it's going to be fun. It sounds like a great time. Rob, I'm a little bit jealous. I'm already booked for that weekend, so I don't think I can reschedule and come, but have a good time. And for everyone that's going, it just sounds like a great event.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, Chris, thanks for coming on. Sorry the video didn't work out for you, but the audio is what's most important anyway, right?
Yeah, no worries. Right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
Bye.
And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Rob, I'll be honest with you. I'm still surprised on their out-of-towners.
Yeah, I know. It's an event that the whole community used to pay attention to, I think. I think they're doing some interesting things that could have some benefits to be spread around a little bit. So it's a big event. 2,000 people is as big of a podcast event as there is right now.
Yeah. So I got to bring up a topic. I put a post up in the Facebook podcasting group, basically asking people to send me links to free resources. And I probably made the mistake of mentioning that, part of my reason for that was to, again, have a free resource, something that didn't lead to someone breaking out their credit card. And holy crap, the firestorm that initiated, immediately the entrepreneurs and the masterminds jumped in with double barrel 12 gauge shotguns and just let loose. And it turned into a thread that probably had 200 comments on it of a back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I was a little bit taken aback. I didn't realize that was going to be as a dynamite of a topic.
Well, Todd, I think you touched on a topic that's kind of, it's been kind of brewing under the surface for a while. Because there's a lot of folks in the podcast community that don't necessarily like a lot of that stuff. And then there's ones in the community that are all, gung-ho about it. So, it was a controversial subject going into it.
Yeah.
I think you probably knew that.
Well, and, I did, but I didn't think it was going to invoke the reaction that it did.
I didn't see the whole thread. I didn't monitor that. I mean, what was kind of the core of the back and forth and the commenting? Was it just that it was unfair, or that you were giving away stuff that people wanted to pay
for? But some of it was I was bashing those that were charging, and some of it was that podcasters should be able to do whatever they want with their money. That's fine with me. My main point was, and I think the rest of people's main point was, there's lots of free alternatives, and I don't mind consultants and people making money. I don't. But sure. I also am at this point in the space where I don't want a situation rising where it's assumed this is what you have to do.
Yeah.
I get you. To make a go. So anyway, that's kind of where, I basically came back and made another statement basically saying, hey, I heard you guys loud and clear. I'll take it on board on what I'm going to write. And matter of fact, I got to write it now. So, but it was pretty surprising. And what it made me do is go out and look around and see what people are charging. And, for some of these courses. And I, basically quite literally was stunned to my core, because the amount of money that's being spent is, in some instances, pretty incredible. The amount of money people are spending to get a coach to tell them how to do what they're doing, to try to replicate what they're doing, to try to be accessible is what they're doing. And it's a little bit getting a little bit too cookie cutter, but, you know, I've talked about this already before. And probably people don't want to hear it anymore, but, I have a heavy level of concern, of the aftermath. You know, I hope they're very successful. I want everyone to be successful. I want people to make money, but I'm at the same time very nervous, of what the fallout could be down the road from this. And I'm not saying it's good. I'm just worried. I don't know. But I guess that's the best way to say it.
So was this this back and forth mainly on Facebook, on your own personal Facebook, or where did it all?
It was in the podcaster page on Facebook and
podcaster page. Okay.
Yeah, in the podcaster page. But what surprised me the most was the number of personal emails I got. There's a lot of people that I total count was like 132, and it ran about 95%. Following my train of thought, and 5% of the folks basically blasting me for saying that I had basically had concerns. So it made me actually feel a little better, because people didn't want to put their names in the stack, and the names that, and they said, please don't say my name, don't say what show I am, because they're worried about retribution. And I thought, what? Really? What? You know, because some of those people are friends with some of the folks doing some of this other stuff. And they said, I just, you know, and I was like, whoa. So that surprised me more than actually the Facebook comments themselves. So I'll probably be taking some quotes out of some of those emails in my write-up on both sides, you know, so not in my email, my article for Podtainment.
So is this a podcaster group on Facebook? Is it a public group or a private group?
Yeah, I think you're in that group. It's the podcaster, the one that Megan runs.
Yeah, I'm not, is it Podcasters World? Is it Podcasters Hangout? Paradise?
Let me look. No, it's... No? Bum, bum, bum,
bum. You'd be good to... Yeah, to share that. So
let me go in here. So it's just called Podcast Community.
Podcast Community. Okay.
Yeah, I'm
a member of that already.
Yeah. So
it's on that page somewhere.
Well, it's not on that page anymore.
It's not.
The back and forth is not.
Oh, okay.
It got pretty over the top pretty quick.
So did it get removed or something?
Yeah, it did.
Oh, interesting. So there is no kind of, you know, existing way to go in and see that.
No, what I wrote was cross-posted on, let's see here, the Independent Podcasters Group. It was cross-posted on the Independent Podcaster Alliance page too.
But that probably created a different thread though, right?
A very short thread. Very short thread.
So. Yeah, and I did see it on your page too. I saw a thread there. I know I commented in that thread.
Yeah, that was you sent me an email on a different thread. Yeah, that was don't get the religious people pissed off at you. That's the main thing. And I go to church too, so just.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with religion.
But it's definitely that group. Long story short. Well,
I think you touched a nerve. You know, there's a lot of people that don't necessarily like what's going on in that part, and there's a lot of people that are gung-ho about it. So you know, I guess you know, each side has their own right to their thoughts and their approach here, but not everybody has to agree.
Yeah, I agree. So. I agree to disagree respectfully.
Of course. And we always do respectfully, but sometimes others don't.
It was my own making, you know, so, you know, I got a little bit of an eye opener for me.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's definitely some passion there. with that. And it's just surprising. It's what it is too, is I think once someone has paid a significant amount of money, a couple thousand dollars to someone to get training, they probably get great training and get started. And then anyone that's attacking that system and suggesting there could have been a different way, they may take it affront personally, which, you know.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
It does make sense.
So
they chose to go that route because they're trying to learn from somebody and not make the same mistakes that maybe a person would make if they didn't have, you know, an experienced person holding their hand. So,
but I think the thing that people continue to fail to realize, you're going to make all those mistakes irregardless. You got to turn on the mic.
Yeah.
You got to turn on the mic. Because now everyone's following the same, almost same cookie cutter formula. And what's to say that's the right formula? And I hope people are going through these classes and taking pieces of that's good, that's good, that's good. If you know, any rational person would do that, right? Take the pieces that they think fits into what they're going to do and then remash it for themselves. You would think that's what happens. And I hope that's what happens. I'm assuming it is.
Yeah, I think that all a consultant can do for a person that wants to become a podcaster is just, you know, enable them with the concepts that they need to be thinking about and the tools. And it's really up to them. I mean, they have to have an ability and they have to be able to pull their ideas together and do it on a week over week basis for years.
Right.
And that isn't something that you can go and pay for. Right. It just, you know, these free resources that you were looking for, I think is really that basic foundation kit that you're talking about. Right. That the consultants typically, that's really all they can offer in reality is just the basics, because going beyond that really
cuts
the individual person.
Right.
So, you know.
But anyway, it did definitely started a bit of a firestorm. So, it's going to make for a good write-up on Pottertainment, which is a subscribed magazine, but I do repost my article about a month later after it comes out for free. So,
speaking of that, I think we have new articles to write. I haven't written mine yet.
Yeah, me neither. I just look at the clock and I'm like, oh, I got to get that done. Yep. So
it doesn't seem like it was that long ago that I wrote my last article.
Yeah,
so.
This one won't take too long to put out, though, I don't think. I think it'll go pretty fast.
Yeah, I think you've got a good foundation of commentary on the subject that you can comment about.
Yeah,
for sure,
absolutely. And you just look at like the, you know, there's two or three really good G+ communities. I'm doing tech support now. I have to stay abreast. They don't come to our page and do a comment on the, or submit a ticket. They say, hey, this is my problem, and they put it in the Google+ page. So I'm now having to monitor on a regular basis all of those different communities to make sure that someone hasn't asked a question that they could have got answered probably quicker by coming straight to us. So so at the same time, though, it builds up the resident knowledge of the folks that are in those groups too. They can read that comment thread, say, oh yeah, that makes sense. So I think the Google+ and Facebook communities are doing a lot to help the new folks as well.
Well, I don't spend much time in those Google+ communities. I need to definitely do that more. But I wanted to also just raise another topic. Based on what I'm hearing and seeing, I'm not going to go into any details. I'm really excited about what's coming to the New Media Expo.
Oh, really?
And, you know, with NAB. I think it's going to be an amazing event.
Yeah, so you got to talk to Rick then, I take it.
Yeah. So I think, you know, everyone in the podcast community needs to really get on board with this thing, because I think it's going to be huge for the space. And I'm just really excited about the changes and the things that are being worked on right now. So I think it's an exciting one. I would definitely pay attention to what's going on there. And we'll have Rick on a more regular basis to give updates on that, because I think it's that important.
Yeah, I agree as well. And, you know, this is, I think the attendance is, well, obviously, we're immediately going to have exposure to the 100,000 people that are at NAB. And it's literally 100,000 people that are going to be there. You may not get 100,000 people through the show floor, but it's wall to wall. And then all the, of course, you know, he's going to have some live events going on the show floor. And of course the vendors are going to be there. The vendors that have already, you know, that's the thing. It's, you know, I'm like, I don't waste any time. I want a vendor booth, you know, get, sign me up as soon as possible, because, it's going to be huge, and that's going to sell out quick, I think.
Well, I think it's also the other big kind of feeling that I'm getting about it is that talent is going to come out for this more than what's typically happened at the earlier New Media Expos, right, or, you know, or the podcast movement. I mean, big name talent's going to come out that's been in the podcasting space for years that hasn't really participated in events like this.
Yeah.
And that's going to enable kind of like the things we were talking about with Chris, of potentially having live events, and because then it's going to be drawing in the potential of drawing in fans and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. I think the opportunity of doing more of that at these events is going to become more and more a plausible thing. Like it's been going on for many years, and I don't know that a lot of people in the podcasting community know that kind of stuff goes on at Comic-Con too, where podcasts about, you know, TV shows and comic books and all this stuff, they do live podcasting at Comic-Con. It's been going on for years. I mean, all the way back to 2008, I went to a few of those podcast sessions, and, you know, so these big events are really have been supporting this concept for a while. It's just that it hasn't really come to the podcast, you know, focused kind of events yet. And I think we're coming into a time in the next year where it's going to make sense to actually do that.
One thing too that we've, you know, we've exhibited NAB for a number of years at that show alone, and we haven't. You know, our focus has been about the set-top box space and the being able to have channels on the Roku and those variety of those type of selling those products that we have, and I've learned a lot about the other side of the fence. You know, I don't know if I've told this story before, but I had a guy come into the booth and I was talking, you know, we gave him our spiel, our, you know, 30-second, you know, the thing you repeat 1,000 times, a show like that. And he says, well, you know, you guys work with content creators. Are any of them looking for production companies? And I'm like, well, normally stuff is done on people's spare bedrooms and, you know, garages and or a corner in a room. I said, you know, production, there is no production budget. He said, well, you know, I've got a great deal going on right now. You know, it's like $23,000 per hour for production of video content. And I'm like, that is, you know, that's maybe someone's budget for the whole year and doing 55 shows. And, you know, this, you know, the guy will look at you like, you know, you're from Mars. But at the same time, the there's a certain amount of talent that is typically at the show as well, looking to make connections and see what kind of technology they can use for their content.
Yeah, and I think podcasting is gonna open their eyes and say, you know, I can directly reach my fan base, and I think you know, a lot of big name talent has been, you know, not considering that. But if they're extremely busy, it's hard for them to do podcasting too. So I think there's kind of two parts to that. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm just really excited about, you know, what's coming in the space. I think here over the next two years, I think is going to be it's going to continue to scale.
I think all we can do is it's going to be a wild ride. I think. If it continues to go at the pace it's going right now, you know, it's going to get a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've also seen some peaks and valleys before, so we'll see. We'll see where it leads. But I think if Rick can pull off a great show, it'll be good. And it's going to be an event I'm not going to miss for sure. And we'll definitely be encouraging the folks that we work with to go. And, it could also drive Rick to having a different caliber of people on sessions as well.
So yeah.
The session lineup could be considerably different.
I think so. I think it's, or it's going to be a more complete mix of the current community that we have today.
So don't forget, folks, New Media Expo is not only podcasting, it's live streaming, it's bloggers, podcasters. I guess those are the three major.
And web video creators.
Web videos, yeah, YouTube folks. Yep. So there's a couple of other shows that happened during the year that I thought about attending as well that are basically live streaming specific. Streaming media. I don't know if it's going to be east. It's going to be east.
East and west. Yeah, they usually do one in New York and then one in Las Vegas.
I think it's supposed to go back. I don't know if it where it was last year, but they have a pretty good show that's for those that do live streaming.
I've been a speaker at both east and west and moderated panels at those events in the past.
So are you going to Indy for Rain or just Norm going?
No, I'm not. I'm not going to, but we are going to be represented there by Norm Pattiz, and he's going to be there. Yeah. I think he's keynoting at that event, but I'm not going.
Okay, cool.
Got too much to do in LA.
Yeah, I understand completely. Well, Rob, we're almost here at the bottom of the hour, so what's on tap for next week?
Oh, you know what? I believe we have, I don't know that I've got it right in front of me here. Let's see. I think I do. I just need to pull over here and pull up my list of things. Let's see here. I don't have a guest yet for the 6th, so, but I do have a female podcaster for September 13th that's going to be on. But nope, nothing for next week yet. So nothing I can announce anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
but it'll be a good one.
Oh, good.
Always will be.
It always is.
Yes.
So we're going to wrap up. Any final comments today, Rob?
I just want to say, I'm excited about the podcast space and what's happening today. And I think, everybody needs to really focus on, doing the basics, right? Just like, what you were talking about earlier, this whole spin up around the podcasting community and the business side of it. So, just focus on the basics. But
well, you know what the basics are? It's the three C's. You know what the three C's are, right? Content.
That's right. And we talked about it before, I was really encouraged to see that more women are getting involved in this space.
Right.
And I think that's going to help scale and grow the audience for podcasting. And that's so important to building this. It's great.
And just as a note, if any of you are listening or in the Columbus or Ohio area, I have a job opening. If you are interested, definitely email me. It's a sales and marketing biz dev type job. Would be on an entry level kind of a level. So if you've had 10 or 15 years of experience in sales and marketing, you're probably not my candidate. But if you're someone that's fresh, someone fresh out of business school, we definitely want to see their resume. So you can send that over to CEO@rawvoice.com.
Yeah, I'm also looking to hire a couple people to work for me down at Podcast One right now, too. So they can help me do some things around there. So, yeah, I'm trying to think if I have any way that I can reference that. But if you wanted, if you live in the LA market and you want to send me an email, that'd be great. It's just rob@podcastone.com.
So there you go. So some job opportunities as well on the show. All right, guys, the folks and ladies that are listening, thank you for being here. And you can reach Rob or I at todd@newmediashow.com or rob@newmediashow.com. Feel free to send us an email and provide us feedback on the shows. We hope that you're getting some valuable information from us and making planning on what you're going to do with your next year with the events and so forth. But I guess that we get out of here. Everyone, thanks. We'll see you next time. Take care. And from here, from Honolulu, at least, aloha. And Rob?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. See you later.